Well, this is terrifying. I've never stood on a stage without being behind a guitar. This is weird. Can I borrow your? Do you mind if I just? You guys were great, by the way. Oh boy. So the topic I was given was something about being born for these times, and I looked at it and said, I'm not gonna touch that with a 10-foot pole. I don't have that in me. What I do have in me, though, is to talk to you about my spiritual journey and where I find myself at this moment. This is going to be a Mary Oliver day. I can't believe that you picked a Mary Oliver poem. She's my favorite. At home, I have an altar, a little altar with a Buddha on it. And then above the Buddha on the wall, there's a picture of Mingyur Rinpoche, who's my teacher from Nepal. And next to him, there's a picture of Martin Luther King Jr., and then there's a picture of Gandhi, and then there's a picture of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and then on the very top is Mary Oliver and her dog, Percy, because that's how I roll, I guess. So Percy, by Mary Oliver, our new dog, named for the beloved poet, ate a book which, unfortunately, we had left unguarded. Fortunately, it was the Bhagavad Gita, of which many copies are available. Every day now, as Percy grows into the beauty of his life, we touch his wild, curly head and say, "Oh, wisest of little dogs." So the thing I'm going to talk about today is called Leaning into Discomfort. This is going to be fun. Leaning into Discomfort and Mystery. Little about me, I was born not very far from here, just in Grand Rapids. I grew up in a little town called Casnovia, a little farm town. I grew up in what I would probably call the spiritual tradition of extreme evangelicalism. My people spoke in tongues and healed people with hands and cast out devils. It was wild. I grew up with a penchant toward belief. I always leaned toward belief. In fact, when I was a kid, they took us to go see a pair of faith healers, Charles and Frances Hunter. It was like a dynamic duo, a married couple. And at the end of the service, they had everybody line up, and they were going around praying for people, and they'd say, like, "Hallelujah," and they'd smack you on the head, and people would fall down, right? So, oh, sorry, I can't walk around because of TV. Yeah, geez. So they got to me in line. I was just little. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and the lady did her prayer over me and shoved me down, right? Well, I got back up and got in line again. And she got to me, and she said, "Honey, I just prayed for you." I said, "I know, and you knocked me down. Let's do it again, and I want God to do it this time." I was rooting for her. I wasn't, like, being a jerk. I was like, "Let's do it, you know what I mean? I want the real thing. Like, if it's, let's go." So yeah, they ushered me out of line, and that was kind of the way that went. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've got 9 years sober. I'm old enough to know now that when I say that and you guys clap, you're really clapping for my friends and family that don't have to deal with alcoholic me. Like, that's fine. Early in my recovery, I was also diagnosed with ADHD in my 40s. Early 40s. That helped me fill in some gaps about behavior and why my addiction was the way it was. Year one is you just hold on and don't drink or try not to drink. Year 2 and 3, things start to get a little bit better. And in AA, we have this stuff called the promises. Your life starts getting a little bit better. And basically, it's because you're not living like a complete jerk. Right? About year 4, you go, "I have the same brain that I had when I was drinking." And drinking was the solution. It was the wrong solution, turns out, but it was a solution. It worked pretty well for a while. That feeling of having the same brain led me to mindfulness meditation, which became a practice for me. It was very helpful. From mindfulness meditation, I got interested in Buddhism. And when I got interested in Buddhism and started reading about it, I thought, this is the way I've thought kind of my whole life. And there's a name for it. I had no idea. Which leads me to where I am today. I'm a student of Mingyur Rinpoche, who is a Tibetan Buddhist from Nepal. And I find it very useful. So the things that I'll be talking about today are kind of from that perspective, because it's the perspective that I have. So I hope we're okay with that. And if I say anything this morning that's useful to you, my wish is that you take that and go with it. And if things that aren't useful or don't ring true, just let them go, because I have no answers. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, I didn't even graduate from college. I'm just a dude that wrote some songs and made some records and got to tour around. Like, I have no credibility at all. So just take it for what it is, right? Some guy up here talking. I do have some life experience, which is fun. So the first thing that I'm going to say is this great quote from Pema Chodron. And she's a Buddhist nun who runs a place called Gempo Abbey up in Nova Scotia, and she's an author. And she's written these great books with these wonderful titles. They're going to uplift you like crazy. Like, one's called The Places That Scare You. The Wisdom of No Escape. How about that for a bestseller, right? When Things Fall Apart. And Welcoming the Unwelcome. Oh, gosh, Pema. You got to work on your titles. She said, everything that ends is also the beginning of something else. Pain is not a punishment, and pleasure is not a reward. Well, that's about the exact opposite of the way I was raised, right? I was raised that you do something good, you get the reward. You do something bad, you get punished. The comedian Chris Rock said that sooner or later, life's going to punch you in the face. And I've certainly found that to be true. When life does punch you in the face, that's kind of the space we're going to be navigating for the next couple minutes. According to the IRI marketplace, the self-care industry is a $450 billion market. That tells me there's a lot of suffering in the world. That tells me there's a lot of discontent in the world. These events can happen right out of the blue. I was lucky enough to become friends with a guy named Hal Ketchum, who was a great country music star. He had a record called Small Town Saturday Night that was on number one past the Beatles. He was something else. And he toured on that record for, I think, 2 or 3 years. He told me the story that he got home to Nashville after 2 or 3 years, and he was living the best life, you know, and he had the hit, and he's working on another record, and all this stuff's going great, and it's Christmas time, and he brings his wife to dinner, and he says, baby, what do you want for Christmas? And she says, I want a divorce. And Hal said, well, I wasn't thinking about spending that much. He said, but right out of the blue. Right out of the blue, right? You finally make it. Things are going great. The rug gets pulled out of you, out from under you. Change is the one thing you can count on. The main reason that we have this suffering is because of impermanence. Everything changes. Even the cells of our body completely regenerate about every 10 years. So, in fact, you're not the same you that you started out with. We're completely different. Sharon Salzberg, who's a wonderful meditation teacher, said that we long for permanence, but everything in the known universe is transient. That's a fact, and one that we fight. So not all suffering is created equal. There's a Sanskrit word. When Buddha said that life is suffering, the Sanskrit word is dukkha. And it's often translated as suffering, but really they say that it means that discontentment, that feeling that something isn't quite right, that there's a little bit of sand in the oyster, you know. Well, it's the sand that makes the pearl, but there's that little bit of something. Then there's this other kind of suffering. It's that dark night of the soul, when the rug's been pulled, the gig is up, nothing will ever be the same again. The Calvary is not coming. In fact, you've discovered there's no Calvary. These are the feelings that we want to avoid no matter what. I am going through a divorce right now, and I'm living this, so this is kind of like as of what we, you know, I'm speaking from where I'm at. Everything in our being wants to avoid this. Run away from discomfort and fear. We fill up the void with food, TV, phones, drugs, alcohol, sex, video games, you name it. Anything just not to feel. It's nothing to feel bad about. It's our natural human response. It's our fight or flight. Some of my favorite distractions lately have been hours of the Great British Baking Show on Netflix. There's a story about a Buddha that was in Thailand, this big statue. It was clay, and been there for hundreds of years, this big clay statue. And one day there was a monk out there, and he would tend to the statue, and he noticed that there was a piece that kind of was falling off. So he went to investigate, and he started digging it. Well, he found metal underneath the clay. Well, they cleaned the whole thing off, and it was gold. And centuries before, there was wars happening, and the monks had taken it and packed clay all around it to make it not look precious. The good news is, in the midst of all this suffering and pain and impermanence and jive of life, is that you are equipped with everything inside of you to deal with it. The good news is that you're perfect just as you all are. And like the great Tibetan master said to his student, you're perfect the way you are, but you could use a little bit of work. So our job continually over and over is to go and to peel the mud off, to remember who we were at the beginning. There's the famous, Buddha saying, no mud, no lotus. But it's a painful process. Years ago, so I grew up in this fundamentalist church. I tried really hard to be the best little Christian I could be. I failed miserably over and over. I remember going to this big evangelical charismatic church service when I was a young person, and there was a very charismatic speaker, and they had a great band. The band was good. I got to tell you, the band was good. And people were rocking, and this big charismatic speaker came out, and he yelled to the top of his lungs, who wants to be an overcomer? And everybody went, wah! And he goes, who wants to be an overcomer? And everybody's screaming and hollering. And then he said, how many people want something really terrible in their life they have to overcome? And it was silent. But that's the rub. That's where we are. So this dark night of the soul, when the rug's been pulled, when there's no Calvary coming, when we're anxious, when we're scared, when we're fearful, are our opportunities for actual real growth. Those are the times when instead of feeling the defeat, we can choose to feel the opportunity. It's not an easy thing, and it's not a permanent thing. But it can be just for a moment, just to find that gap, just to find that little space where we can be with what is happening without judgment, just the way it is. That's the move. That's the move. Father Gregory Boyle, who wrote Tattoos on the Heart, who started Homeboy Industries in LA with gang members, said, sometimes resilience arrives in the moment you discover your own unshakable goodness. He also said, terror melting into wonder and then slipping into peace. That's the good stuff. Things falling apart is a kind of testing, and it's also a kind of healing. We think that the point is to pass the test or to overcome the problem, Pema says. But the truth is that things don't really get solved. They come together, they fall apart, they come together again, they fall apart again. It's just like that. The healing comes from the letting there be room for all of this to happen. Room for the grief, room for relief, for misery, and for joy. So in my life, lately, in my meditation practice, there's two parts to it. There's the formal thing in the morning when I try to do my 15, 20 minutes, but there's also what my teacher says many short times, many times throughout the day. And it's in those little moments that I find that we can, with grace and gentleness, start to welcome those parts of our lives that we feel unwelcome. We can start to have tea with the fear, or have a little bit of tea with the anxiety, or have a little bit of moment of welcoming those feelings that are uncomfortable. Without judgment, without shame, just that moment of saying, oh, I know you. I know you, fear. I know you, anxiety. So in Japan, after World War II, they would find these soldiers on these remote islands that didn't know the war was over. And instead of just walking up to the guys and saying, hey, it's been done for about 5 years, you know, they would get a person of high command, and he would put on a uniform, and they would go to those people, and they would relieve them of their command. They would thank them for the great job that they did. That's the same way that we need to deal with our anxiety, with our fear, with our depression. These things have come up as these protection mechanisms that we've created. And they were useful. They're very useful. But sometimes they're not useful anymore. So we need to give them the same amount of love and dignity and respect and put on our uniform and relieve them of their command. The rub is that it's not a one-time thing, right? It's that we keep revisiting these things over and over and over throughout our lives. But they get a little bit easier, a little bit easier, a little bit easier each time that we do that. Each time that we spend that time with anxiety, then anxiety comes and we go, oh, I know you. Each time we spend a little time with that fear, oh, I know you. Two Dogs, who's like my second dad, who's a native guy, he would always say, if you want to get to know me, you got to spend time with me, he'd say. He'd say, it's the same way with them spirits. You want to get to know them, you got to spend time with them. If you want to get to know your mind, if you want to get to know who you are, you have to spend time with it. So, like I said, I'm not a doctor or a psychologist, and I'm not saying that if you have a severe anxiety disorder, you don't go get help or you don't talk to anybody. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that we have opportunities in these moments to get to know ourselves, to relinquish our love of catastrophic thinking, to realize that, like all things, fear and anxiety and depression come together They are there for a moment, and then they go away. That's what our meditation teaches us. That like all things, like relationships, they come together, they blossom, they end. Like our seasons, they come together, they blossom, they end. Like our thoughts, they come together, they blossom, they end. I think goopy crap. I don't know, am I the only one? You know, like I could be up here thinking about squirrels. Right? Where did that thought come from? I just thought about a squirrel. It comes and it goes and it ends. Right? The more we sit with these things, the more we sit with anxiety, the more we sit with fear, the more we sit with our depression, the more we sit with these things, the more we see the transient nature of what they really are. So I'm going to read one more poem. Then I want to do a short little meditation, and then I'm going to let you guys go because it's a beautiful day. Another Mary Oliver poem. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. And meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination and calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. Let's just take just a minute. We'll just do a real quick little meditation. If you want to sit up and have your spine be a little bit straight. You can close your eyes or not close your eyes. It's up to you. You could not do it at all. That's up to you. Just take a breath. Start to relax your neck and your shoulders and your back. Relax your lower back and your thighs and your knees, relax your feet, relax your toes. Feel your feet planted on the earth, rooted. As we breathe, we feel our breath, whether it's in the belly, or maybe you feel it in your nostrils. We don't try to alter our breath, we just breathe naturally and just be aware of our breathing. If you find yourself getting lost and thinking, just say to yourself, thinking, and then go back to the breath. And as we sit here, we hold the tension of relaxation and anxiousness, of depression, of joy, of answers and questions. And it's all okay. Again, if you find yourself thinking, just say to yourself, thinking. And go back to the breath. If you find a feeling come up like anxiousness, just say, hi, anxiousness. I know you. No judgment. You don't have to judge the thought, you just say thinking. You don't have to judge the fear or judge the anxiousness or judge the question. Take one more deep breath. Open your eyes and come back to the world. That's it. That's the practice. There's no judgment. There's no answer. There's really not even any real meditation. Just being aware. Just feeling the feelings. And then if it gets too overwhelming, you take a break. You hit that baking show on Netflix. You doom scroll kittens on your phone. You go for a run. But I think that if anything is going to get better on a global scale, things got to get better here. We have to start to be comfortable with who we are. I'll give you one more quote, and then we're going to go away. If I can find it. Sharon Salzberg again said that you can search throughout the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself, and that person is not to be found anywhere. You, yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your own love and affection. So as you go throughout your week, be gentle with yourself. Because you deserve it. Thanks a bunch.